Welcome to issue 34 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that renumbered itself to number one and is now calling itself Behind the Panels. Now, I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other co-host, David McVeigh. How are you, Richard?
Now.
We'll talk more about that a little bit later on.
David, it is going to be a huge week this week because of that story. In this issue, of course, it's Marvel Now and We Pay Later. DC's back on top with dinosaurs and, of course, dinosaurs versus aliens. And then Spidey gets a trilogy. Marvel delays its cinematic universe by a few months. And Hellboy goes to hospital. Plus, our kick-ass pick of the week, Fire by the ubiquitous Brian Michael Bendis.
And interestingly enough, he also drew this one.
He did. Yeah. I didn't even know he drew at all.
I didn't either. I thought that was very interesting. But we'll talk about the art style later because it's very interesting.
It is interesting. But before we get to that, we have a very important thing to do, David.
Oh, please.
It's the vintage clip of the week.
Yay!
And this week, it's a bit of a doozy.
Demonic Dr. Doom teamed up with the mighty Submariner. Can anything now save mankind?
What's all the commotion? Wow! Look who's coming up the street!
Fearless, calm, fully aware of his great powers, Submariner confidently makes his way through the uneasy, staring crowds.
Stand aside! I will bode no interference from mere mortals. My extrasensory mutant brain detects the awesome presence of Submariner approaching our peace building.
What can the monarch of the deep want with us?
Be silent, air breather, and I shall tell you. I've come to seek your trust. Mine is indeed a lonely kingdom. And a lasting friendship may prove of more value than any fleeting taste of revenge.
Very impressive, Submariner. But how do we know it's not a plot? How can we be sure you haven't set a deadly trap?
See for yourself. Am I not alone and unarmed?
It is possible that you have come in peace. In which case, you won't mind us checking out the building.
Projection room all clear.
Roof landing strip all clear.
Observatory all clear.
Lobby and lab all clear.
Launch area and electronics controls all clear.
Conference and map rooms all clear.
Humans, your suspicion is laughable. Does my presence now pass your rigid inspection?
I'm not satisfied yet, Submariner. Stay where you are. I have a few more questions.
So there you have it. Professor X is rigid and unsatisfied.
Silence, air breather. I'm going to use that in my day-to-day life from now on. Every time somebody says something, I'm like, silence, air breather.
That's laughable.
Well, I was just listening to it thinking, wow, that's gripping cartoon viewing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Conference room, clear.
And it was just going from like monitor to monitor for like half a minute.
Jacuzzi, clear.
Did you hear me, Submariner? The jacuzzi's clear. You and I can go in there and be rigid and unsatisfied.
Silence, air breather.
I bet you he wins over all the ladies with that line.
Oh, I bet he does. Oh, my God. That's the Submariner cartoon, I'm assuming?
Yeah, that was the stuff from the Marvel Superheroes Hour from Name of the Submariner, and that was an episode called Dr. Doomsday, as you heard at the start of it. That was Dr. Doom and Namor teaming up for some reason, 1966.
Wow. I got to say, maybe not the most gripping of the TV shows that they've produced.
Silence, Andrew.
You are. What is it? What is his extraordinary brain?
Yeah, my extraordinary mutant brain has picked up Namor the Submariner.
Oh, dear.
That was Charles Xavier, in case you didn't guess.
I kind of figured.
So, David, a lot has come out this week. What have you been reading?
I got to say that aside from Fire, of course, which we're going to talk about a little bit later, I've got to just talk a little bit about Action Comics, number 11, came out, which I really enjoyed. There's this little subplot in it. For those who have been keeping up with Action Comics, you know that he's basically killed Clark Kent at this point, and he's trying to figure out what to do with himself. And
which, by the way, sorry, is like the best move that they've made since this whole thing started.
Absolutely. But, I mean, he obviously brings Clark Kent back because in Superman, Clark Kent's there. So we're leading to this, whatever this plot is going to work out to, because as we know from the two books, they're about 5 years apart or something, aren't they?
Yeah, about five years apart.
So what's happening in Action Comics does actually eventually reflect on the Superman comic that's coming up, which is actually one of the more interesting things about these two comics. Rather than just having two concurrent comic books like any number of the Batman books that you can pick up, in this situation, we actually have two books that are actually in two separate time zones. And that makes it a very interesting read because they kind of influence each other in that sense. But there's this little lovely little subplot in this book where some guys go into a t-shirt shop. And we all know that Superman wears this t-shirt with the Superman logo on it in the Action Comics world. And this t-shirt guy, who looks a lot like Garcia, the musician, is basically saying that he's the man who actually made the t-shirts for Superman and all this sort of stuff. And it's a lot of fun. It's a really cute little, really, again, he tells the story of how Superman came into his shop. And I thought that was a really cute idea. But the other thing I wanted to talk about was Avengers versus X-Men. And yes. I think you've been reading this as well.
Yes.
And I think I'm enjoying it. I mean, I like the characters, and I think there's a lot to be said for those characters. But like X-Sanction before it, which was basically an ad for this series, I feel like this is an ad for something we're going to talk about in the news.
I think it is, actually, because I think where this ends is where one of the new series that we're going to talk about in the news picks up. My frustration with Avengers versus X-Men is here we are at issue 7, and we've still got another 5 to go, not to mention all the tie-ins and AVX versus stuff and all those other, you know, sub-books and tie-ins and so forth.
And don't forget A versus X,
which that
I can't stand.
The thing is, they've actually made the main series kind of intentionally fragmented, so you have to go up and pick all these things. You actually go from page to page, where like clearly stuff has happened in between page 7 and page 8. It's not working well as a standalone series.
And we were discussing just before the show that one of the best things that happened in this most recent, it's between 6 and 7. Where it happened was they have this other digital only thing called Avengers versus X-Men Infinite, which is like these little stories that are happening in this large panel digital format for iPads. And
yeah,
it's a really, really good Infinite between these two. And all I can think is that should have been in the main book, because it was this wonderful moment where Scott, who is now with the Phoenix Power, basically soul searching, finds himself on the moon where Jean died, and he forms her out of the moon dust with his new powers and has a conversation with a dead woman about responsibility and all this sort of stuff. And she's basically saying, you're an idiot. And of course, it's all in his head, which means basically he's a little bit poo-hoo, you know, in going on what's going on. But it's a really, really good scene. And all I can think is, I wanted to see more of that in the main comic and less of what's actually happening.
Well, there's actually a scene halfway through issue 7, which is the issue that came out this week, where Captain America turns around to the assembled Avengers and says, folks, there's bad news and worse. The bad is that the X-Men have started taking prisoners, and the worst is that Stark and T'Challa need more time. So we're going to go back out there into the field and play rope-a-dope with these guys a while longer. It's basically a line in there that says, yep, we're going to string this out with these meaningless fights for another about 4 or 5 issues. I mean, it doesn't actually go anywhere. And this is the frustrating thing about the book. There is no end point in sight at this point, and they don't seem to have achieved anything at this point, with the exception of maybe reintroducing Scarlet Witch.
And on top of that, Marvel has made it so that you can't literally read anything else because you're spending all your money on this series, because this series is coming out every 2 weeks.
Exactly.
So it's coming out every 2 weeks, plus all the additionals, plus all the side stories, and you sit there and go, where has anybody got any money left to buy anything else? Because it's not just a monthly book, which is what it should be. It's this thing that is every single week you have to get something for it.
Well, this week, DC weren't much better in terms of what they were putting out in their original content, quote unquote. They put out two books this week, which I think kind of have a few parallels. There's Batman Earth 1, which we will be talking about in full in a few weeks, so I won't talk about it much now, but also Before Watchmen, Ozymandias. Now, the two books basically go back and retell an origin story that's already been told.
A many, many, well, in the case of Batman, many times.
Many, many times with Batman. In the case of Before Watchmen, Ozymandias' story was already told succinctly by Alan Moore in issue 11 of the original Watchmen series. Mm. It was only in a matter of pages, but it was basically the same origin story that you get in issue one here, except this time it's going to be strung out over six issues. In the case of Batman Earth 1, again, I don't want to mention too much because we will be talking about this in full later, and it has just come out this week. But there's not enough difference in the origin story, I feel, to justify the separate thing. Also, when Geoff Johns and Gary Frank did Superman Earth 1, this was before the New 52. So there was a reason.
Wait, I got to correct you. Wasn't Superman Earth 1 written by J. Michael Straczynski?
Oh, sorry, straight back Michael Straczynski. Sorry,
don't give Geoff Johns that one.
Sorry, Geoff. I know everything else is done by Geoff Johns. Yeah. Geoff Johns and Gary Frank did this one. So, yeah. Sorry, when Straczynski and did the previous book, it was done in its own timeline because the DC universe hadn't been rebooted. That made sense. But now that they have actually rebooted everything, seemingly with the exception of Batman, there doesn't seem to be this need to have a sandbox because the entire DCU. Is a sandbox at the moment. They can do what they want. But that aside, they try to cram far too much into this first thing. There's also, given that we've got this wonderful Court of Owls series going on over in the main books, they've actually crammed in the origins of Bruce Wayne, Jim Gordon, hints of Batgirl, and there's a major villain in there, as well as this storyline about a child killer called the Birthday Boy. But meanwhile, over in Before Watchmen, it doesn't quite fit with the Adrian Veidt character that we knew from Watchmen either. And it's just kind of, it's trying to make him a little bit more human, and that doesn't work when you know that much about that character. He loses that sort of enigmatic nature that he had in the main book. So
I'm actually having some problems with the Before Watchmen, and we always knew we were going to. But I've gotten to a point where I'm not looking forward to them, and they're low on my list of reading.
Absolutely.
And I kind of sit there and go, I should read that one. Later.
On the flip side, a book that was low on my list of reading was Green Arrow, which is unusual for me. But I finally caught up with issue 11 this week, which is the one out this week. Mm. And it's surprisingly good because I think for the first time, it's not great, but it's a lot better than it has been. And it's actually got a lot of the character development in it, which has been missing from the first 10 issues. Mm. The first 10 issues kind of hit the ground running. Also, those two characters that were kind of like Green Arrow's Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
They're suddenly back again.
Well, about time.
Yeah. They've just turned back up for about two panels, mind you, before he jets off again. But it's just kind of like, hey, remind you, we're here. Hi, how's it going? But there is a little bit more of that kind of hard traveling hero stuff in there. She's clearly aped a panel there, like a kid runs up to Green Arrow at one point and says, hey, what are you doing for the city? You know, you're off international jet, you know, setting all the time. What are you doing for this city? Which maybe is where they're trying to say he gets his idea of being a social crusader from. And, but I don't know. I just found it a bit of a cheap way of doing, getting character back into it. But it's still a step in the right direction. What I'm looking forward to...
It couldn't take many steps in the wrong direction. I mean, no, I've gone to a point where I almost didn't read the latest couple of Green Arrows because it was like,
Well, the best thing that's coming out of the issue zero month that's coming up is going to be Judd Winnick, who wrote a fair chunk of the old Green Arrow series, is actually coming back to do an origin story as part of the zero issues.
Well, maybe he can save it.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
And then just rehire him full time.
That would be a good idea. There you go.
Yeah. which may happen because Ann Nocenti, who's actually writing Green Arrow now, is going over to do Catwoman after issue zero.
Oh, no, don't tell me that because I love that comic.
which is currently being written by Judd Winnick. So maybe they'll swap.
Yeah, and so Catwoman will take a nosedive and Green Arrow might come up for a while.
Well, you know, it's only fair.
Yeah, dear. I was really enjoying Catwoman too.
Yeah, me too.
Dear, oh well. There you go.
So, anything else, David?
Oh, yeah, I read the latest World's Finest. Love World's Finest, by the way. Can I just tell you that? I have a real soft spot for it. You know I've got a Power Girl soft spot anyway. But
oh, yeah.
I'm really enjoying it. And the thing I really like about it more than anything is I like the chemistry between the two characters. Mm. I think they've really nailed the relationship between Huntress and Power Girl to a degree where they feel like a couple of girlfriends out fighting crime. And it's actually a lot of fun.
No, it's really, really well written. And I think Paul Levitz has done marvelous job on that.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where it goes.
Yeah, look, I'm very curious to see Paul Levitz nailing Huntress and Power Girl.
Hey, clean tag.
What? I didn't say anything. They were all words.
You're a bad man.
I am. I think we better go to some comics news before I dig this hole any deeper.
Fair enough.
What a scoop!
Okay, even I thought that was loud.
I had to take my headphones off, actually. Now, David, we hinted at this at the top of the show, but Marvel Now. Now, this has been announced by Marvel this week. I'll bring up the official press release here in front of me.
Must you?
Yeah, well, Marvel's official take on this is the most popular characters, the most acclaimed creators, the most ambitious stories. This is Marvel Now. Basically, what they're doing is they're going to they're not rebooting. They're re-evolving. The entire Marvel line.
That's a new word for us. I got to write that one down. Hold on.
It's not a reboot. It's not a reimagining. It's not a re-envisaging. It's a revolution.
Oh, dear. It's a re-something.
Basically, they're starting with, in October, starting with Uncanny Avengers number one, which is going to be the superstar dream team of Rick Remender and John Cassidy, both of whom have been on, respectively, been on Uncanny X-Force and Venom and Astonishing X-Men and Captain America. They're going to be doing this new book called Uncanny Avengers. But from that point onwards, from October through to February, there'll be new number ones for all of the major characters every week.
See, I think this is a bad idea. I'm sorry. Call me old-fashioned.
Now, David, I actually took a bit of a straw poll out on the street, and I ran into a guy who runs the Quickie Mart in Springfield.
Oh, yes.
And this is what he had to say about it.
Oh, you have got to be kidding, sir. First you think of an idea that has already been done, and then you give it a title that nobody could possibly like.
Love it. I'm just looking at this picture from Marvel Now. And, yeah. This is on your site, I believe. If you go to realbits.com, the link will be in the show notes as well. But I'm looking at this promo picture, and we've got, let's see, Iron Man and Wolverine. And all I'm thinking, there's Hulk and the Spider, and all I'm thinking, there's Rocket Raccoon down the front. And all I'm thinking is, this is like Marvel Productions' ultimate lineup if they could get them all for Avengers 2.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, it's like, I'm just looking at it going, are they trying to gear this up for another film?
Well, just very quickly, the books that they have announced, apart from Uncanny Avengers, that's going to be the Avengers and the X-Men must join forces to overcome the greatest challenge either team has faced. And that's coming straight out of Avengers versus X-Men. So obviously this is going to be, and they actually say in the thing, you know, can Captain America's newly assembled team find a way to peacefully coexist while also dealing with the game-changing repercussions of Avengers versus X-Men? And so obviously Avengers versus X-Men is now officially just a lead-in to this new event.
Which is what we were talking about and what we've been watching, where we said that X-Sanction felt like an ad for Avengers versus X-Men, and now Avengers versus X-Men just feels like an ad for this.
Now, this one, it kind of interests me. It's called The All-New X-Men. It's getting a number one, and that happens in November. This is being written by, you guessed it, Brian Michael Bendis.
Yay!
and Stuart Immonen. Apparently, now this really intrigues me. The series sees the original five X-Men mysteriously brought to the present day.
I kind of like the sound of that.
I really like it too, and this is their way of bringing back Jean Grey as well.
Yeah, although they've actually brought her back about three times already.
So. I know, but this is the original Jean Grey being brought back, you know, no clones, no.
Now, the question is, if she's brought to nowadays and the Phoenix Force is kicking around, does that mean it wants to take her over? Because Jean Grey was best when she was Phoenix.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm speculating.
Yeah, well, this will be really interesting to see, actually. I love the idea of a time travel kind of thing. And I think Brian Michael Bendis might have actually said it's not time travel in the sense of Back to the Future. It's time travel in the sense of Pleasantville.
Ah. And you know what? In the hands of any other writer, I would be really nervous. But I think Brian Michael Bendis could make this work.
Yeah, well, exactly right. And also, because there are not enough Avengers books at the moment, there'll be Avengers number one by Jonathan Hickman that's going on sale in December. And that's going to apparently have a roster of 18 different heroes, and that's going to be a bi-weekly book.
Oh, crap.
And also, there's going to be New Avengers number one, also by Hickman and Steve Epting, and that's going to start in January 2013. But I don't know what actually distinguishes that. But as you said, in that artwork that's on there, some of the other clues include the fact that there's Sue Storm's in there by herself.
Yep.
And Rocket Raccoon's there at the front. And there Nova. Seems to be – now, I'm not, I haven't read the latest couple of issues of Iron Man. Is that new armor for him?
Now, this is – I actually just read this last night. It's actually very – I should have brought this up on what we've been watching, what we've been reading. But it's interesting because Tony Stark has – the long story, but Tony Stark basically has been kicked out of his company and blah, blah, blah. And he's about to be attacked. And this guy shows up and says, I'm Iron Man in this costume, and saves Tony Stark. And Tony Stark is like, I'm going to sue you for copyright violation. Mm. But we have no, actually, but we have no idea who this is.
One thing I've just noticed on that, it's Ultimate Nick Fury sitting on there.
Yes, it is.
That's interesting.
In Steve Rogers, old Captain America, when Steve Rogers left being Captain America and became the head of S.H.I.E.L.D., that was the costume he was wearing.
Yes.
So what the hell?
Maybe that comes out of Spider-Man.
Maybe we're pulling all the universes together into one straight universe.
Wow.
Now, that's there's an interesting thought for you. I don't know if that'll work, but there's an interesting thought for you.
Because is that the old Nick Fury over on the left hand side?
No, could be.
Yeah.
Oh,
two. I'm seeing double four Nick Furies.
And who's the guy in red up the front? Is he one of the Guardians? Or no, that's Cyclops in a new costume.
That's Cyclops, yeah, that's he's kind of a hybrid costume that's somewhere between what he's wearing in Avengers versus X-Men.
And his visor is now an X. Isn't that cute? Okay.
Yeah.
This looks, and we got Nova and Rocket Raccoon in there, so we're mixing some of the Guardians in there. This is a very interesting picture. Although this is just a promo for the entire Marvel Universe, so it could just be like a bunch of heroes vomited onto the page with no connection to each other.
It is, but it does seem unusual that they'd have some Ultimate characters in there as well.
Because there's Jean Grey up in the top corner.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Look, as much as I am kind of pissed off by this news, I'm also vaguely fascinated by it.
It could be a train wreck, but again, it's like Apu said, it's kind of like this is clearly a response to what DC has already done. Mm. And whether it pays off for Marvel or not, who knows? But this is smacking of the desperation of the mid-90s. I mean, you look at, you just go back to the mid-90s, a time when DC killed off Superman as a major thing, and they also killed off Batman effectively for a short period of time.
Yeah.
And then you had Marvel scrambling over on the other side with the Clone Saga and, week after week of variant covers and foil covers and all those sorts of things. I worry that we're going back to those days.
Yeah, we might be in that two-decade cycle where we're now reaching the point where it's like, okay, the golden age is now over. Let's have a dark period, and then we'll come out of it at the other end, because at the moment it feels like we're heading into that dark period. It feels like the focus is too much on the movies and where the comics are suffering.
Well, we're going to be here every week and watch it fall.
Yeah, I think we will be. This is going to be a fascinating run. I think we might be doing a lot of independent stuff.
Welcome to Behind the Panels, issue 73, the week that comics died.
Yeah, it's a little bit sad. I I'm kind of fascinated to see what they can do with this, but all I can say is, Marvel, way to go and copying somebody else. Yeah,
and it's a full year after DC did it. At the time, it's literally the time when DC is celebrating their first anniversary with zero issues. Mm. But then they're going back to their regular numbering. So
can I just throw this out there and basically say that I think this is such a mistake, because Marvel was on the right track. We've talked about this on the show, this idea of very stealthily rebooting certain characters and issue, like with the Punisher and the Daredevil series and on Avenging Spider-Man. They've been on such a good run of basically getting jump on points for everybody and making it all work, and then to suddenly just go, yeah, start again. And it's like, oh God, you were so close. You know? It's like you were so close, and yet you just threw it out the window.
I know someone said to me on Twitter this week that they can't wait for another 6 months when Marvel does it all again.
Pretty much. That's how it's feeling.
They'll skip this reboot. They'll wait for the next reboot. You know,
And in the film franchises, we're recording film actually later on today, and we'll be talking about that same sort of feeling with the Spider-Man film. So
absolutely.
You know, so well, there's a plug for film actually. So listen for that as well.
Well, DC, who as we said have been doing the right thing, are actually now back on top in terms of market share. But again, there's still only a hair's breadth between it. DC Comics took 36.72% of sales in May, this is his, but the actual retail market share, it's 33.77%. Sorry, it's the unit market share that DC's back top with.
I'm actually in the retail market share, Marvel is a hair above.
It's like 0.5% above.
Yeah, and in unit market share, DC is just a hair above.
Above, which is also 0.5% above. Yeah. So look, we're not talking about anything else. It's basically before Watchmen this month has been the thing that slightly pushed DC above. You know, next month it'll be, you know, Marvel's big event slightly pushes it above because in the next month or so we're going to have Avengers versus X-Men 7. So obviously that's going to be a big finish. I'm sure someone's going to die, you know, and everyone will have to go out and buy the 7th. Actually, speaking of events, around this time, Walking Dead number 100's coming out or just about to come out.
Yep.
There are 15 variant covers. 15.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing I do like about comic books, though, is that on mini editions, they'll actually put multiple covers on the actual comic.
Yeah. That's what a novel I did.
I like that. What I hate is when they release the same comic 15 times with different covers. Yeah. And you sit there and go, I'm not going to buy them all. I'm sorry, it's the same content inside. I'm not going to buy them all. You know?
But you look at the actual top 10 comics for last month, and the top two were Avengers versus X-Men issues. Then you had Batman number 10. So Batman is the top book in the DCU at the moment, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
Justice League number 10 is the next book, and again, rightfully so.
Absolutely.
Then all the Before Watchmen books, not rightfully so, but understandable. And then Spider-Man number 1 made it up into the top 10.
Well, and it deserves it. That actually is actually a relatively decent book.
And honestly, that's how you do an event because it's completely self-contained as far as we know. It's 4 issues long, and if it doesn't pan out, they can ignore it.
It may not be so self-contained judging by that picture.
No, it may not be. I think it might be leading into it. I think that's why they've had Ultimate Nick Fury interacting with 616 Peter Parker.
Yeah.
I think something's going to happen there. But, look, you know, honestly, don't mind at all. And I think that's how you do it. Even if it's not self-contained, it is self-contained during the telling of it. Mm. And so you don't actually have to go and buy, you know, Amazing Spider-Man or Ultimate Spider-Man during this. You can just buy this book. And that's what I like. I really like that.
I agree. I like this list at the bottom here, though, which is the top 10 graphic novels and trade paperbacks. I love the fact that Watchmen is still number 3.
Yeah.
I think that is phenomenal.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Never goes away.
Almost 30 years old, that book.
Yeah, and still there, still hanging in there. And it's surrounded, look, Alan Moore above it with League of Extraordinary Gentlemen 3, Century number 3.
Yes.
What else we got on this list that I'm thinking, Days Go, oh, wait a minute. Oh, that's Walking Dead. That's okay. Well, Walking Dead's on this list, what, twice?
Twice, yeah. I mean, look, it's fantastic. And also the legacy of Alan Moore is taking up 4 of the top 10 comics of the month as well. So
I got to tell you, I watched an episode of The Simpsons the other day, and you've probably seen it because it's an older episode of The Simpsons, but it's the one where they go to a comic book convention, and Alan Moore is actually at the comic book convention.
That's right.
And I watch it, and he rips off his shirt, and he's all muscly, and it's him and 2 other artists. I forget who the other ones were, but it was Alan Moore that caught my attention because I went, I wonder who's doing the voice for Alan Moore, because Alan Moore would never agree to something like this. It was Alan Moore!
There's a bunch of them appeared in that episode. I know. It's amazing.
I went, you came out of your cave for that.
As long as I can bring the cave with me. You
know, I was stunned that it was actually him doing his own voice.
Oh, and a good friend who sent us in that clip last week about the Taken 2 trailer parody, he said he's working on part 2 of that. So
oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Oh, dear. All right. I'd like to point out that the retail market share and the unit market share of comic books is a lot like a presidential race.
Yeah.
No, I was just thinking, there's 2 parties, Republicans and Democrats, and then there's everybody else. And even though Image is number 3 on the list, you look at it, it's 7% as opposed to the 33% of the nearest contender. I just think it's amazing that we look at it and go, I mean, 7% is still amazing for an independent comic, but those two, Marvel and DC, have got it locked up.
Oh, they've got it locked up, but I think the fact that it's actually DC's a third, Marvel's a third, and everybody else is a third.
Yeah.
I think it's actually impressive of just how powerful independent comics are, that they actually still take up a third of the market now.
I guess so. You know, Archie's hanging at the bottom with 0.52%.
The hottest publisher in comics.
Absolutely.
Alrighty, we'll quickly whip through some of these stories. The final story we've got in the comics news section is about dinosaurs versus aliens. Now, this came out last week as a hardcover. It's the first volume of an intended larger story. Mm-hmm. And also, as we know, this is being developed with Barry Sonnenfeld and Grant Morrison simultaneously as a screenplay and a graphic novel.
Right.
But a trailer went live this week for the motion comic version of it.
Yep.
But it also had a few bits of interview segments in there with Sonnenfeld and Morrison. And I'll play a little bit of that now.
Cool.
Hi, I'm Barry Sonnenfeld.
And I'm Grant Morrison.
And together we're doing Dominion Dinosaurs versus Alien. Originally, I came up with a concept, which is what would happen if aliens invaded Earth 65 million years ago and the dinosaurs had to defend Earth against this alien invasion. That was an initial idea.
Most films that have been based on a comic, for instance, have tried to emulate or to ape the comic. We've got two different versions of this thing.
And if you go to the link in the show notes, there's three more interview clips as well. But
can I just tell you, Barry Sonnenfeld feels like he should come out of a Woody Allen movie.
I know.
Hi, I'm Barry Sonnenfeld.
I came up with the original concept of dinosaurs having to fight aliens.
I love him. I love him. Every time I hear him talk, I just think you really should be in a Woody Allen movie.
No, it should have got. Look, it's an exciting little book, and I like the idea of it being developed simultaneously as a movie. But I also love that, you know, Grant Morrison's there very emphatically telling us, look, comics and movies are very different mediums, so we have to develop them in different directions. And I think it's encouraging to hear that, knowing that they're not going to just make a straight adaptation of the comic that they create, and likewise, they're not going to make a book that's trying to emulate a movie feel as well, because I think, you know, movies have a lot more to learn from comics than the other way around, you know?
Yeah.
So, but that's our comics news for the week. I think it's time to head back to the 80s and have some movie news.
All right. Movie news. All right, before you go any further,
yes.
Your first story up here is about The Amazing Spider-Man.
Yes.
Can I just say that this this story is kind of like a, yeah, didn't we already know this?
Well, it is. First of all, look, I'll just say quickly, we're going to talk about this more on the Film Actually show, but just a quick, we should mention it for people who don't listen to that show, and you really should, that we've both obviously seen The Amazing
Spider-Man. That's a little bit bluer, though. We swear on that one.
We swear on that one. For those of you who don't like the swearing and don't want to go over to that show and hear me say nasty, nasty cuss words, what did you think about the film, David, in a nutshell?
In a nutshell, I thought, I'm going to quote another reviewer because it's the first time I think in my entire life I've ever agreed with him, which was David Stratton here in Sydney. And David Stratton actually said, and I love, and as soon as he said this line, I went, yeah, that's it. He went, it's a perfectly adequate film that just feels a little bit like deja vu.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how I felt.
I feel that way too. And I think for comics fans, which hopefully a lot of you are, if you're listening to the show, you're going to feel that deja vu because it's the origin story again.
Again.
And we know, you know, again, you know, we know this story, but back, I mean, it's like we were saying with Batman before, the story's been told so many times. You know,
look, I felt all the way through it that I understand that they didn't have Sam Raimi. I understand that Tobey Maguire walked when Sam Raimi walked. I understand that they wanted to bring, they need to keep making Spider-Man films. I knew they wanted to take it into a new direction and everything else. What I think they should have done is kept it within continuity, just recast it, get a new director, and just told a fourth film.
Incredible Hulk. If they needed to retell the origin story, you do it like you did with The Incredible Hulk. You kind of give you a little bit of the origin story again in flashback.
Yep.
And then get on with it.
Absolutely. We didn't need to go through all of it all over again.
And the thing is, the new element that they added, and we'll talk about this more on the film show, the new element they added of Peter's parents' past was a question I never had. And it's a question that they endeavor to answer, but they don't really do that in this, which gets us to our first story about this movie being an intended trilogy.
Now, this is what I was saying about this article. Didn't we already know this? Now, I actually read an interview with the late Laura Ziskin a while back now, actually, because for those who don't know, she died. She's the one that died, isn't she? Yes, Laura Ziskin
died.
Yes. She's the producer of all the Spider-Man films. And she, before she died, when this was going into production, she said that they were going to reboot it. And she goes, when they made the very first Spider-Man film, they had no idea if it would be successful or not. They really didn't. They were big gamble from Sony. And they'd spent a lot of money on it, and it was going to be a big gamble. When it was a huge success, so they basically packed everything they could into that first film. And then when it was a huge success, they went, oh, we have to make a sequel. And so they made a sequel, and they packed everything into that, and then that was a big success. And then, of course, they had to make a third one. She said, this time round, with this reboot, they know they're making a trilogy. And so they can take their time, because she said a major part of Parker's life is high school. And in the first film, he's out of high school in 20 minutes. And so they said they want to keep him in high school this time because they know they have time to do this. They know it's a successful franchise. They know that they can really kind of work their way through a trilogy this time. And of course, then she died and she didn't get to see it through to fruition. But which is a very sad thing because Laura Ziskin was a real power producer. But so we kind of already knew this was going to be a trilogy. And I don't know why it's surprising people now.
Yeah, look, it's not really surprising. It has been out, but I think the news is that it's been officially announced via the film's Facebook that it will be a trilogy.
Right.
And so I think that's just nice to have confirmation that we're planning. Again, I think they wanted to wait as well to their opening weekend until they officially announced that. There's probably no doubt that this is going to be a hit. My problem is that because it's planned as a trilogy, it feels like an unfinished movie.
It does feel a little bit like, and we'll talk more about this in the film action show, it does feel a bit like a unfinished film. The one thing I will give the film, and I'll talk about this in the show tonight, is I actually really enjoyed the first half of this film because I really enjoyed the fact that they did take their time. I really enjoyed the fact that we did get to establish him in high school. We did get to see that growing romance. We did, and he doesn't become Spider-Man until halfway through the film. Problem is, with that, is that the second half feels rushed.
Yes. Now, the other thing, the other series that really isn't being rushed at all, they're taking their time with, but doing amazing things, is the Marvel Cinematic Universe over with Disney.
Yeah. Now, this I'm more excited about.
What was that?
This I'm more excited about.
Slightly more excited, yeah. Now, they've announced that the date of the second as yet untitled Marvel film for 2014 has shifted from May 16th, 2014 to August 1st, 2014. So we're going to have to wait a little bit longer for the next Marvel film, which the next Marvel film will be Iron Man 3, which comes out in May, the 3rd of May in the US. And can I just add that Disney Australia announced their lineup this week. We're getting it a week earlier.
Yay! God love you, Disney.
So we'll get that on the Anzac Day public holiday week, which is the 25th of April. So that will be very nice. So look for our reviews a week before yours, US. yeah, we're very excited about that. So for those keeping score, the Marvel Universe is now looking Iron Man 3 May next year, Thor 2 at the end of next year, which is November, Captain America 2 in April 4th, 2000 – Thor 2 at the end of next year, and then Captain America 2 – and April 4th, 2014. And the as yet untitled film will be August 1st, 2014. Comic-Con's next week, I would imagine that film will have a title by then.
There was actually an article post-dating this one by a couple of days that I read that actually said that even more leaks have come out. It's pretty much on the money that it's going to be Guardians of the Galaxy.
And I think it makes sense that's why they pushed the date back, because Guardians is going to be a big film.
Yeah, it's going to be a very expensive film too. So.
And I think, you know, you don't want to necessarily have that rush that out to be a month after Captain America when you could take your time. And I think having something in the first quarter and then something in the back half of the year is a good pattern for Marvel to have.
Yeah, and I have a funny suspicion that Thor 2 will have elements of what are going to lead into Avengers 2. Then Guardians of the Galaxy will pick that up, and then Guardians of the Galaxy will end leading into Avengers 2.
Also,
all going to be Thanos.
Well, speaking, it's definitely going to be Thanos, but I think speaking of our previous story, the Amazing Spider-Man trilogy. I think that the Amazing Spider-Man 2 is planned for about May 2014. So Marvel are giving Spider-Man plenty of room before they bring out their Guardians of the Galaxy,
and so
as well.
Yeah, there's only so much money in the world, guys.
So I mean, look, you know, we are comics fans. We will see them all, and we're in a fortunate position of getting to see all of these movies usually for free, because we do get critics screenings for these, which is very, very nice. But for everybody else, it would be a little unfair to ask that much money, particularly at 3D prices.
Yeah.
3D IMAX prices.
That being said, can we just talk very quickly? The 3D in Amazing Spider-Man was really good.
I got to say, look, visually, Amazing Spider-Man was one of the best Spider-Man films to date in terms of its pure visuals. I really like what they did with the point of view stuff as well.
Yeah. So I still think Spider-Man 2 is by far a better film. It's purely personal. I love Spider-Man 2. I think Spider-Man 2 is just knocked it out of the park. But I think that this is okay.
You can't touch Spider-Man 2. I think Spider-Man 2 is one of those top five forever superhero books.
Exactly. Spider-Man 2, X-Men 2 are kind of like the touchstones of everything. Everything is gauged towards those two films. Now I think The Avengers is probably up there as well.
I would say so as well. Now, a movie that may not be up there in terms of touchstones, but still a lot of fun, is Hellboy. Hellboy went to hospital this week, not to get finally get some plastic surgery on those horns or his giant hand, but rather he went to – and I love this story. It's one of my favorite stories of the week. Ron Perlman turned up in full makeup to visit a young leukemia patient in hospital.
Oh, that is so cool.
Now, this is Ron Perlman, who's 62 years old now. It takes 4 hours to get into this makeup. And I can't believe Ron Perlman's 62, by the way.
That's amazing.
He got into full makeup, went and visited this boy whose make-a-wish was to meet Hellboy and then one day be Hellboy himself. So Ron Perlman go and sit and talk to him in full costume, but also they took the kid to get his own Hellboy makeup done later as well.
That is so cool. Can I just tell you, Make-A-Wish Foundation is so good. We have firsthand experience with this. My son, for those who haven't been following us for all these years, is an ex-leukemia patient. He's all cured and he's fine now. But they sent him on this whirlwind tour of all the theme parks in Queensland and stuff. They're just wonderful. They are wonderful. And to make this happen is fantastic. So everybody should go out there, should be donating to Make-A-Wish. It is so important for these kids.
And it's terrific. People like Ron Perlman, you know, give their time to be part of this as well. So, look, you know, wonder. It's probably the best story this week, I would say.
Oh, I agree. I think that is so good. I got to show that to my son. He'll love that story.
Now, I think that is a very nice point to end our movie news on.
Yes.
I will just give a quick reminder, because I will be drawing this in the middle of this week, and we'll announce the winners next week, that you can still have time to enter our Walking Dead Season 2 DVD and Blu-ray giveaway. All you have to do is follow the link in the show notes and answer the question, why does David deserve a copy of The Walking Dead 2 on DVD or Blu-ray?
Probably our weirdest question to date.
Well, we did come up with it on the fly.
We did. We also have, before we go into our pick of the week, we have some feedback.
Ah, excellent. You asked a question last week, didn't
I did.
You,
I asked a question last week and we got an answer. Mike Wheeler, Mike from Canada, basically says, hey, Dave, here are the Spider-Man issues you were looking for. Now, if you remember last week, we actually called out to say, when was it that Spider-Man's secret identity became secret again? And what happened to his marriage? Because he was married to Mary Jane and suddenly it was all gone. And, of course, we could have gone and looked this up by ourselves. But, you know, I'm lazy. And so we put it out there to our fans and said, can you find out how this all happened? Because it fascinates us. He wrote back and said, hey, Dave, here are the Spider-Man issues you were looking for. The Amazing Spider-Man number 544, Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man 24, Sensational Spider-Man Volume 2 41, and Amazing Spider-Man 545. The event was called Spider-Man One More Day. He says he didn't read it, heard it was cuss. Here is the link in Wikipedia if you would like it. Have a great day. We'll put this link in the show notes as well for people to read this. But just in a nutshell, very briefly, according to the Wikipedia article, about halfway down, it's got the little plot point. And for those who have ever wondered how his secret identity got hidden again, apparently Aunt May was shot. and was dying, and Peter went to all of the usual people, Doctor Strange, blah, 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 Reed Richards, and nobody could save her, and she was dying, and Doctor Strange basically said that he should go to the hospital and be by her side because she's dying. On his way to the hospital, according to Wikipedia, it says Peter is confronted by a little girl who says she holds the answer to his problem. He talks to the little girl, who runs off. While pursuing her, Peter encounters a group of men. A woman in red informs him these are alternative versions of himself from alternate timelines where he never became Spider-Man. The woman in red transforms into the demon Mephisto, who of course Thor deals with all the time, who tells Peter he can save Aunt May. As payment, Mephisto wants not Peter's soul, but his marriage to Mary Jane. Why? Who knows? Peter and Mary Jane are given until midnight the following night to decide their answer, and after several hours agonizing over the choice, they agree to the deal, as long as knowledge of Peter's secret identity is erased from the world. Mary Jane also whispers to Mephisto another unspecified offer in return for Mephisto, putting Peter's life back exactly how it was, and quote-unquote, giving him a chance at happiness. We don't know what Mary Jane whispered. If anybody knows that answer, please get back to us. Finally, Mephisto reveals to the couple that his disguise as the little girl was in fact their future daughter, but she will never exist now because of their decision. And there you go. That's why Peter Parker's identity is hidden. Now, Richard, you've had a feeling about this?
Yeah, I thought it was one of the stupidest comics ever. this came out of Civil War and the Spider-Man Back in Black storylines.
Yes.
It was another gimmick after several other gimmicks. And Michael Straczynski had done some amazing work on Amazing Spider-Man. He literally put the amazing back into Spider-Man, made it a must-read book. And this is back when I was reading Spider-Man as it came out monthly. And it was a fantastic book. It was a time when you really, really wanted to read Spider-Man every month because it was the best book ever. He stayed on that series a little bit too long. Mm. After this, it leads into a series called Brand New Day. And that almost deals with, 100-odd issues that follow that from, issue 546 through to 647, which is not too long ago. I'm reading Amazing Spider-Man now, and they're actually redoing stuff that they did back in the 60s and 70s. In fact, this week's one, not coincidentally, Amazing Spider-Man's in cinemas right now when, he's fighting a lizard.
Right.
So they actually do a story where, you guessed it now, David, you remember we read book issues, 96 to 122 last week. He's fighting Morbius and the lizard in a sewer.
Oh, really? That's unique.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the editor actually references issue 101 in there going, we've met before. Yes, way back in issue 101. And it was kind of like, really? It felt lazy that this cross-in tie-in marketing just to have a lizard story out there.
And look,
I know,
it must be hard to produce this many comic books in years and months, and they've got a lot of titles going on and so forth. But it's amazing to me, and this is all companies, this isn't just Marvel, but it is amazing to me that in the Marvel universe you can have something as good as The Punisher or Daredevil, the current run, and then you can have something that just falls so flat on its face. And in the DC universe, you got the same thing. You can have something so good like Justice League, and then you get a Justice League International, which is falling on its face, And it's just amazing to me that there's such a disparity between these titles.
It's amazing. But the thing is, Amazing Spider-Man, as we said, has now run for something like 600 and something issues, 680 odd issues, I think, to date.
And this is along with all of the other Spider-Man titles around it.
Exactly right. And it's gone through renumberings and back to its original numbering and so forth. So we're looking at least 1,000 Spider-Man books that have been out.
Yeah.
They're
going to repeat themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I just find that occasionally you're going to get storylines like, One More Day.
Yeah. One of the other problems with Amazing Spider-Man, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Amazing Spider-Man went to being a bi-monthly book as well, which means they're having to pump out issues.
Yeah, look, no, it's never a good idea to go bi-monthly unless there's a good reason for it.
Yeah, or is it bi-weekly? Is it bi-monthly or bi-weekly? What? How do you say it? Two times a month?
That would be bi-weekly.
It's bi-weekly, sorry. It's called bi-weekly.
Or if you prefer, twice monthly.
There you go. That'll...
That's a problem book. I mean, I think Avenging Spider-Man's far more interesting at the moment.
Avenging Spider-Man is excellent. I just wish it came out more often.
Yeah, if that was only bi-weekly, then it probably wouldn't be as good.
No, that's true. That's true. I think Red Hulk deserves his own book now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, I don't know if Red Hulk was in that big picture that we saw from Marvel now.
No, there was a huge picture of the Hulk in the background wearing, look like armor.
Yeah.
Well, and he's got hair again.
Well, obviously, that's part of the reboot. That could be the focal point that causes the trigger. Hulk regrows hair, and that sort of sends ripples all through the Marvel year.
For those who don't know, Hulk is bald at the moment. Even my son looked at one of the comics recently and went, he's bald.
He's bald, Jerry.
Well, should we talk about our pick of the week?
Well, theoretically, we've got 10 minutes of the show left, so we probably should.
We'll probably be running over today, I think. Here we go.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
It certainly is. Now, Richard, before we get started, our book this week is Fire, of course, by Brian Michael Bendis, written and drawn by Brian Michael Bendis, which I didn't know he drew, so there you go. But I thought I would just read very quickly. The edition that we actually read is actually the restored edition.
Yes, I found this really interesting, actually.
Yeah, so did I, and I had no idea. So just so those who know, when it originally came out, Brian Michael Bendis actually has this wonderful little postscript notes in the back of the book where he talks about how when he actually released it, he thought it was the greatest thing he'd ever written. and he decided when it was being – he was soliciting Fire to basically get a re-release, and he thought that he would have a quick look through it because, of course, it was the best thing he'd ever written, so he didn't have to worry about it too much. And then when he had a look back on it, he realized that it wasn't quite the book that he expected it to be. Now, he hasn't changed the content of the book as such, the words, the story, but he freehanded all of his own lettering in the original book.
He did say he tosses in some updated and snazzier dialogue.
A little bit here and there, I think. He also did things like he changed backgrounds. So in the demonstration they've got is the word bar written behind it. It's actually got a glow around it and stuff like that, like it's neon, So he's just kind of touched it up, and all the lettering's been redone because, of course, he's admitted that his freehand lettering isn't as good as he thought it was. So we should point out that the book we are doing is actually the re-release. Not the original edition. So, with that disclaimer in mind, the book is Fire.
Yes, well, this is probably the first book that Brian Michael Bendis came to attention for. This was written all the way back in, was it 1993, I want to say?
Something like that.
1993, there we go. It came out in January, February 1993 as two issues. It was published by Caliber Comics at the time.
Right.
And has now been republished as a single volume by Image Comics, which is the volume that we're obviously reading.
Yep.
Because it's the reprint edition.
And that was 1999.
That came out in 1999, yeah. That's right. And obviously Brian Michael Bendis was a slightly bigger name by that point.
A little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah, and he also went on to books after this, like AKA Goldfish and Jinx, both of which are now available in those lovely little hardcovers as part of Vertigo's Crime Line.
Yep.
But also he did, pave the way for things like Powers, and then eventually Ultimate Spider-Man and his amazing work that he's doing right across the Marvel Universe now. So for this is actually a seminal book. This is a seminal book because it's the book that brought one of the biggest names in comics today to public attention, or at least to comics world attention. And it deals with – it's a spy thriller.
Absolutely.
First and foremost, it's very much a it's almost like an old-fashioned spy thriller.
It's like an old-fashioned Cold War story. It really
is. Yeah. And it's basically, it's Ben First is the main character, and he's introduced. It's kind of one of those answers first, questions later introductions where they kind of repeat the ending at the beginning as well. Mm-hmm. He's a college student. He's studying political science. He meets this girl in a gallery, then he, not long after that, he sort of feels as though something's going on. Then he gets mugged. Where he fights back, and he's eventually approached by this girl, or woman, I should say, a beautiful woman named Dee Dee, to say that he's being recruited into the CIA.
Into a special program, though. Mm. It's not just the CIA. It's this program where they basically recruit these nobodies, basically, train them up to be couriers and assassins. Yes.
And the project is called Project Fire, hence the title. Mm-hmm. And that's... the idea is to recruit complete rookies and someone who has no ties to the agency at all. To see, it's an experiment to see if they can train, you know, your average Joe, or in this case, your average Ben, to be an agent. And then the book itself, it seems to be told in a bit of a fractured narrative as well. It sort of jumps back and forth.
To say the least, there's actually one panel about halfway through it where, and this is no spoiler because it's actually in the very, very beginning of the book. The book opens with him being captured by his agency and thrown into a cell. And he's telling the entire story in flashback. But then there's this one panel, there's this one page in the middle of the book where suddenly we're back in the cell and Dee Dee's walked in and pulled a gun on him.
But then
we're back in the story again. And it's like, wait a minute. Where'd that come from?
And it jumps to different stages of his career. Like at one point he's in England, and then he's in Japan, and he's in Brazil, then he's back at the agency. And it sort of does this fractured thing. And I guess part of the reason they've done it that way, in my mind, was kind of like to talk about the way that this process kind of actually messes with your mind and messes with, you know, your concept of the identity in time, because he really isn't quite sure whether he's coming or going by the end of this book.
It's true. And I think it's fair to say that it took me about 30 pages to get into the book.
I absolutely agree with that, it took me a long time to get the rhythm of it happening.
Once I got the rhythm, I actually quite enjoyed it, and I actually polished it off in one sitting. It took me a couple of starts to get going. And then once I got past that initial start, I think it was kind of when he finished training and went to London. Was kind of where I went, okay, now we're somewhere, you know?
Well, we should mention the way that this book's written as well. It's a very non-traditional comic book. This is not just panels, 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 panels. This is a lot of, like, just pages that are prose with pictures down the side.
Yeah, and what look like rotoscoped photographs.
Yeah. Is it just me? On that point, his agency boss looks incredibly, I couldn't shake it the whole time, looked incredibly like Candace Bergen.
Well, and it's funny you should say that, because in the end of the book, he actually has the cast list. And cast, he actually says Kira Kester as Dee Dee, Candace Bergen as Linda Dagger, Mike Sangiacomo as Uncle Ringo, Bravina as British waitress, Jim Williams as Burly agent, Ron Jackson as Mugger agent, and Shecky Finkelstein as Band. So he actually based these people on real people.
Oh, I missed that completely. So yeah, no, I couldn't shake it the whole time that was Candace.
Yeah, and I felt the same way. I'm looking at it going, that's a very familiar face.
It's like, my God, Murphy Brown has just recruited him to the CIA.
But yes, no, he has a cast list at the end where he's actually used real people as his inspirations. Which I think is fascinating.
I love that.
Yeah, it's very, very good. And there are certain frames, not always, but there are certain frames where it really does look like Candace Bergen. You just can't shake that, especially in those opening panels. You know, sometimes the eyes are too dark, sometimes this, but then there's one or two shots where you just go, I know that face. I don't know a lot of these other people that he's referenced. They must be other actors or what have you, or people he knows or something like that. But, like, I don't know who Mike Sangiacomo is as Uncle Ringo. I don't know who that is. And also, he doesn't actually have anybody here for Ben.
No, that's true.
So Ben is obviously original. He hasn't based that on anybody. So
maybe he's an original creation, or maybe he's based it on himself. That's my...
Could be.
Actually, I think Mike Sangiacomo might be another comic book person.
Oh, could be. Yeah.
The name sounds familiar. Oh, hang on. I'm looking it up. Yes, Mike Sangiacomo is a comics person. And he's also... he's actually a regular... Whether it's the same person or not, he's actually a regular contributor to Newsarama as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And like this page, on page 43 of this book, there's actually this one of these pages you're talking about, which is long prose, and it's all photographs, like the atomic blast, and there's generals in uniform, and there's a shot of the cemetery in Arlington, you know, and it's like you sit there looking at it going, it's a really interesting layout, really interesting design of this book. And it's all in very stark black and white.
It's very much a first book. It's very much an early work. You know, it feels as though he's experimenting with the format. he's working out his best way of telling a story and playing with different styles of art and playing with different styles of layout as well. So there are some panels where it's got, like, you know, got nine small panels to a page, and other ones will be, as you said, these big rotoscope drawings or like you know, all the panels are kind of coming out like shafts of light. Mm. Or there'll be other ones where it's just almost all prose with a couple of panels in the middle, and maybe an image.
You know? Then there's page 56, which is just black.
Page 56. Yeah,
I love it. Page 56 is black, and then page 57 is the same panel, but it's got like spattered blood. Yes. And it's got one body of text. You sit there and go, and of course, this is preceded by a page. It just says blam. So yeah, it's a very intriguing book. I quite enjoyed this book. I thought it was a shaky start, but I actually really liked it. I think I was hoping for a little bit more in the ending.
Yeah, look, I think the book does a really great job of setting up this world. It's almost as if he envisaged having another, you know, follow-up to this later.
Yeah, almost feels like it's the beginning of a James Bond-type story. You know what I mean?
It feels like an origin story because, like, where it's left at the end, and look, you know, obviously, spoilers and all in these discussions, and this is a book that is just shy of 20 years old now, so we're certainly not spoiling anything. Well, mind you, I don't know how widely read this is, but it does kind of – it finishes at a point where, you know, Candace Bergen comes back and says or Murphy Brown comes back and says to him, you know, it's not you're only out when I say you're out.
Yeah.
And if you don't come outside in 5 minutes, it's over for you. And he just sits there drinking his drink, and you don't know whether he's about to get up after that drink or whether he's just going to stay there.
See, and the question is, does he mail the letter? Because the entire story, if we find out, is him writing to a journalist, basically saying, here's the story as it was. Because you wonder who he's talking to all the way through it. And in the end, we finally see that last page where it's basically to the journalist and it's saying, you know, see how are you, whatever you want to do with it. And that's when she walks in and you see him licking the envelope while she's talking to him. And the question is, does he ever actually mail it?
Well, that's interesting. I've just noticed a little note in here, and I don't know how old this story is. Back in 2010, Universal Studios optioned the film. And guess who they penned as the lead for the film?
Oh, who?
Zac Efron.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Zac Efron. Well,
apparently, Bendis was actually adapting the screenplay for Efron at the time, too. So.
Well, what's really interesting is if you go back and look at Bendis's career and you look at Bendis's life, he actually has a book, which we may or may not do on this show. I haven't read it yet. So once I read it, we'll have a look at it. But it's actually Brian Michael Bendis started his career as a screenwriter.
Yes.
And he basically. Long and the short of it, he kind of went to comic books as something to do in the meantime. And what is really interesting is that this book that he wrote, he actually wrote called "What Is the Greatest Sellout" or something like that. I can't find it now. It's somewhere in my collection here. But basically, it's a book all about autobiographical about him selling out. And going to comic books. And so it always makes me wonder whether or not he still feels that way or whether or not he has embraced comic books now. You know, it's a hard one. It's a hard one to know where he actually stands. He is so prolific in comic books that it makes you wonder whether he still has that yearning to be a film writer or whether he's quite happy now. I'd be very fascinated to know.
Well, he doesn't seem to be making any moves away from the comic industry. He seems to be starting a new book every month.
Yeah, well, pretty much.
I think what's telling about this book as well is his suggested reading at the end of the book as well, which is obviously the books that may have influenced him along the way. Mm. Veil by Bob Woodward is one of them, who, of course, Bob Woodward was one of the, correct me if I'm wrong, one of the journalists around the whole Watergate scandal.
Yes, he was.
That was Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward. Oh, there he is. There's the other book, All the President's Men, which was very much, which was made into a film, of course. They were the guys who were associating with Deep Throat. Now, interesting subplot here, a subpoint to a story that we covered last week on film. The late Nora Ephron was one time a partner to Carl Bernstein, and she is said to be one of the few people who knows the identity of Deep Throat.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Just an interesting little sub point there. But look, you know, he's got things in there listed like, you know, Crossfire by Jim Mars, Spy Who Came, basically all of John le Carre's, you know, books. T.H. White's The Once and Future King, which is interesting. And JFK, The Book of the Film by Oliver Stone and Zachary Sklar. So, you know, I think, you know, this is very much a, as you said, a Cold War influenced spy novel, which is done in an incredibly original style, which does take some getting into. But I think once you do read it, it is quite a rewarding little book.
I think so. I don't think, look, we're going to inevitably compare this to Ratcatcher, which is in the same genre, same style in the sense of black and white crime, one-off crime novel. And I think Ratcatcher is better.
Yes.
I think Ratcatcher is a much more solid story. I think this is patchy, and I don't think the artwork is always consistent. But that being said, Brian Michael Bendis is an amazing writer. And when things are kind of getting shaky, he still manages to pull it back. And I think that's actually a feather in his cap, that he has that ability to just kind of go with the role, you know what I mean, and see what happens. That being said, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I thought it was a good read, and as I say, once you get past that first 30 pages, it flies.
Yeah, look, I totally recommend this, not least of which because it's a curiosity, because Bendis is such a huge name. As you said, he's fully embraced the comics industry now. And I do want to read those other books, and I think we've got those available readily now, things like Goldfish and Jinx and so forth.
He also wrote another crime one called Torso as well, which could be interesting to have a look at as well.
Yeah, certainly that early stuff I think would be really, really interesting. And and then you move into, you know, that was by the time he'd moved into his Image Comics period, which was Jinx and Torso, and he did a book called Sam and Twitch, which is meant to be quite good as well.
The name of that book, by the way, I found it. It's A Total Sellout, it's called.
Total Sellout. I do know of that. I remember reading it ages ago. And
apparently
of course,
it's a collection of short autobiographical stories about him, kind of where he came from.
Right.
Yeah, so might be one to have a look at in future shows. But Bendis, we gotta spread. We could do Bendis every week. He's so prolific, but we're not going.
And this
to.
Is, in fact, I think the third time we've covered Bendis at least, because we did Alias, we've done Powers, and now we've done this, and we mention him almost every week.
Absolutely, and we've done Diggle twice.
Yeah,
yeah. So you can start seeing a pattern of our favorite writers here.
And next week we're going back to Batman. So
yay, Batman just keeps coming up, doesn't he? Did you see that Kevin Smith has got a new podcast out?
Another one,
which is all about Batman.
I did see this. Yeah,
I haven't listened to it yet. I'm fascinated though because he's written a lot of Batman. And,
isn't that something like The Fat Man Does the Batman or something?
It's something like that, where he just basically talks about his experiences with Batman. And I think, that could be kind of interesting to have a listen to. So, because he loves Batman, he adores Batman.
Oh no, yeah, we all do. I mean, it's Batman is such. It is called Fat Man on Batman.
Right.
It's another. It's available on iTunes now.
I'll listen to it. And I'll let you know in the next show.
Yeah, I'll do that as well. No, I think Batman is one of those iconic characters that, you know, you can rewrite a million times. And in fact, we've got Earth One again this week, as we mentioned. And he's endlessly fascinating because he's just cool. No matter what you do with him, you can't ruin him too much.
They came dangerously close in The Return of Bruce Wayne, where they were trying to bring him back from the dead. And that came dangerously close to being just too much.
when he was a pirate and a caveman.
That's the series? Yeah. God, I hated that series.
We talk about missteps over the last couple of years.
That was painful.
That was DC's last crisis.
Yeah, that was not good. That was not pretty in any way, shape, or form. All right, so back to this very quickly. Fire, you're going to recommend this to people?
I totally recommend this book. I think it's a classic from an early classic from a writer who is the name in comics at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if you're ever – and it's also really just a great historical piece to basically go back and say this is kind of where he started. And you can see that early formation of this writer who has become the powerhouse writer of, God, the last decade.
At least.
So, well worth having a look at. Now, Richard, we've got some announcements to make.
We certainly do.
We've got some announcements to make. First of all, no show next week. If you've gone to therealbits.com and looked at the future reading list, you would have had all of our dates lined up. That's all being pushed back by 1 week. The reason we're making this announcement is because I don't want people to think we just vanished. In advance, we're telling you. There has been a long-planned update to Geek Action. We've talked about it on the show before, and it still hasn't happened. And one of the reasons why it hasn't happened, just on a technical level, is every time we close Geek Actually to do work on it, it also closes the feeds to iTunes, etc. And what happens is every week we go, oh, I've got some time off. I'll get in there and do some work. But we've just released a new podcast, so we don't want to close the site because the new those first few days are critical. And so it's just become this never-ending cycle of never being able to close the site because of new podcasts. So kind of made an executive decision and basically said there is no major film coming out next week. So it was a good time. It was kind of like trying to look at that, find that right time. And because we do film actually as well, we had to find that right time with the film schedules. And we thought, we'll close next week for, it's probably going to be about 48 hours. We'll be down, so it'll be a couple of days. And then we'll come back with Dark Knight, with The Dark Knight Rises and Nightfall.
Batman Nightfall, which has recently been republished as a giant several hundred page book.
Can we say that one more time? Giant.
Giant book. Now, there's a couple of different, if you want to read Nightfall for the next issue. Now, let me just clarify this first of all. We were originally going to put out an episode on the 16th of July, Monday the 16th of July.
Yeah.
But that will be now coming out closer to Monday the 23rd of July.
Which will give you more time to read that giant book.
But otherwise, all of our titles we've got coming up that include Justice, Get Jiro, Batman Earth 1, Pedro and Me, and When the Wind Blows, they'll all still be coming up, but just a week later than we originally planned.
That's right. Just change your diaries and push everything 1 week forward.
Now, Nightfall has been published in several different formats. The book that we're looking at is one of the newer editions.
Yep.
It is now, I haven't got it here in front of me. I'm looking for the new edition of this thing.
It's called Nightfall Volume 1.
Yes.
And it's a great big book, and it's got Bane and Batman on the front cover.
That's right. So, now, I'm looking out for the exact issues, but what we're looking at, if you really want to boil this down to the essentials, you can just go out and read.
just
go out and read. Now, look, if you really just want to boil this down to the essential, the original Batman Nightfall trade paperback was still a hefty 272 pages.
Oh, God.
But that was issues 491 to 497 of Batman. Also, Detective Comics 659 to 663. This was the original trade paperback.
63. Right.
So this was the original trade paperback that was just called Batman Nightfall Part 1, Broken Bat.
Right.
Now, the newer edition actually covers a whole lot of material. It covers... Now, let me get this straight. This covers the Batman Vengeance of Bane Special Number 1, the Batman 491 to 500... So there's an extra three issues in there.
Yep.
Detective Comics 659 to 666, another three issues.
Yep.
Showcase 93, number 7 and 8. And Batman Shadow of the Bat 16 through to 18.
Good Lord. Okay. Did we say it's a giant book?
We will not be covering the equally giant companion book, Night Quest.
No, don't even go there.
Which is about the same length. And then coming out in September, there's Night's End, which is an equally huge book, which will be the third and final volume.
But they've actually said Nightfall Volume 1. So are these actually Volume 2 and Volume 3, or is there going to be a Nightfall Volume 2?
No, it's Nightfall Volume 1. Nightfall Volume 2 is Night Quest.
Right.
And Nightfall Volume 3 is Night's End.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yep.
We're not doing those. Don't get confused.
We are doing this with massive undertaking. So two reasons we were taking a week off next week.
Yeah, so the redesign of the site and of course, the massive book.
I think it is something close to 600 pages.
Yeah, I think it's the biggest thing we've read so far. And we're going to have to really figure out a way to do it on the show where we're not going to be here recording for 4 hours. So,
and of course, the other advantage of us doing this after The Dark Knight Rises coming out of the cinema is that we'll be able to compare the two, because book is very much the inspiration, from what we can tell, for Christopher Nolan's new film.
Yes, yes. So it's going to be a very interesting time. So it's going to be a bit of an interesting roller coaster. So as I say, if you go to Geek Actually, you'll have to spend your time at Real Bits at the moment, because if you go to Geek Actually, we're going to be closing the site Saturday night Australian time at about, I think it's probably about 8 o'clock. Saturday night, and it won't reopen.
Saturday the 14th of July?
That would be it, yep. And yes, it won't reopen. It'll be Saturday, Sunday, Monday. It'll be reopening sometime on Tuesday.
Right.
Depending on what the schedule is like. So it's going to be down for like 48 hours to maybe 3 days.
Right.
Depending on how long this is going to take. And it's going to be a lot of work and get it all up and running. But it's going to be fantastic when it's done. It'll be
looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, it's going to be really good, and it'll be streamlined and much better, and it'll all work a lot better, and it'll be a lot faster to post stuff, and it'll be just generally all around good. So with that being said, so that's the big news. So if you try and find a feed next week and you find a feed is dead, don't bother writing me. I know the feed will be dead because the site will be closed. So that's the whole point. That's why we're doing it then. And then of course we will be back the following week with Film Actually, Dark Knight Rises, and Nightfall on Panels. So it'll be very, very exciting time.
It'll be a bat week.
It'll be a big bat week.
Let's do every news story we do on Film Actually News. We'll make it a Batman-related story.
In some way, we will try and make that happen.
Okay.
I don't know if we'll be able to, but we will try and make that happen. And at some point, we will have to probably play this.
Some days, you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Yeah, there you go.
I have no Batman sounds.
Really?
That. Oh, I have two, actually. I have this one.
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
There you go.
And the other one's Mr. Freeze one. I'm not going to play
I also that. Have this one.
Batman.
There you go.
That so, guy is going to play Batman in the reboot.
I think he should. Yeah. Well, you know what, Richard? It's
time for a disappearing act, boys.
You betcha. It's that time of the show.
All right, then.
Shazam!
I think it's time for us to head out. I think that's another behind the panels. Have you got anything further to add?
Only that I'm going to miss hearing myself next week.
Yeah, me too. It's always a sad time when we don't have a show going on. For you listeners out there, you think, oh, I don't have my new show. It's really weird for us too. It feels like there's something missing in the week.
We're just sitting around here talking to ourselves.
That's right.
I really remember talking to somebody else about this time.
Just staring at a wall.
Yeah.
And this week's news.
I have new comics, and I've just read something, and I'm sure there's something else I'm supposed to be doing.
Richard, where can people find more of you on the internet?
Apart from staring at the wall, they can find me at therealbits.com. That's therelbits.com. They can also find me on Twitter at DVDBits, where I will be tweeting my loneliness for the next couple of weeks.
Oh, dear. And you can find me at geekactually.com, or you can find me on Twitter at David McVeigh. Yes, we won't be here next week, but we will be here in 2 weeks. Time flies. You won't even notice we're gone.
Yeah, and we'll be reading books. So, and if you're reading along with us.
And imagine how big the what we've been reading section is going to be when we come back.
Yeah. We're going to try and squeeze in 2 weeks' worth of comics and a 600-page collection into the next issue.
And I'm sure Dark Knight Rises will feature in that conversation as well. So it's going to be a huge show when we come back. So we better
just
get out of here.
Hold on to your lariat. Sorry, just
hang on to your lariat.
That's what you're gonna do.
That's what you have to do. Until then, Richard, I'll see you in 2 weeks.
See you then, David.
Bye.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire.
Oh, you have got to be kidding.